Chcesz w ogóle z tego apki konsol, czy nie?
Klasa, kiedy korzystamy.
No tak patrzę, jak to się robi w ogóle. Nie korzystamy.
Czy opcja z tokena po prostu wpisane? A nie, czy tam da się w tego dostęp z jakiego diski, co tam jest?
Hello.
Gdzie to są settingsy?
O, co chcesz zrobić?
No chyba mi ten.
To weź się pomnie, znaczy weź się, żeby to mniejsze było to okno, weź drodze kliknij.
A nie, bo tu?
Nie. Co chcesz zmienić?
No bo z tego co tutaj, speakers przebra.
Hi, Sebastian.
Hi, everyone.
Hi, everyone. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. Hey, again.
Okay. Okay, so why don't we go ahead and get started? Welcome to the Sprint 102 showcase. For this sprint, we have a team Ona who focused on finishing the superset addition to Docker Compose and prep for metrics building based on OpenLMS V2 reports and testing the NiFi version control process. Team Ona finished 18 story points, and these are the tickets that they will showcase today. Team Parrot for Sprint 102 continued focusing on making progressions for CI improvements, and they finished 32 story points today. These are the tickets that they will be showcasing today. Team JSI focused on the R&R columns, and they finished 13 story points in Sprint 102. These are the tickets that Ilias will showcase today. And then Team Mind the Gap continued the notification redesign work and finished 22 story points for Sprint 102. And a few of these tickets will be showcased today by Changsun. Overall, out of all of the teams, we had 8 bugs that were fixed this sprint. And why don't we take a look at the unit testing. Does anyone have anything they'd like to take a look at in regards to the unit test? Looks like it's failed.
Or does anyone have any comments about for the last sprint how it's been going with checking the unit tests as we see ones failing? Is there anything anyone wants to comment about? Has it been hard to keep things running? Anything that, any reflections anyone wants to share?
Well, maybe I will just have one comment, which is kind of related to our work on improving CI and stuff. And it's also an action item from our retrospective from today. So I will be probably contacting all the teams, perhaps via Slack, just on the general channel, to ask about any feelings and problems, issues, or ideas for improvements. Because we want to make sure that that our CI workflow is smooth, that everyone is notified about any failed builds, like on any stage in our pipeline. So the unit testing, the integration testing, the contract testing, performance testing. I want to make sure that the person who commits gets that feedback about any failed builds. So we are definitely interested in hearing what we might still be missing. And of course, we are still continuing to work on that CI improvement epic that is in the team's Parrot sprint. So that's just my general comment.
Thank you, Sebastian. Okay, so why don't we start with Team Ona and Craig.
Hi, everyone. Sorry, I was on mute. Are you able to see my screen?
Yes.
Great. Sorry about that. I've got two mute buttons. So this sprint, we were focusing on standing up the superset system and closing a ticket for OAuth support and testing out the NiFi registry. So there were a couple that we didn't get to, and I'll mention that after this update. The superset, the team has made it so that you can stand up superset as part of Docker Compose up, and superset is using the publicly supported version that we outlined in, this one, Docker.
We lost your screen share. Could you retry your screen?
Yeah, let's see what happened.
Thanks.
Yeah, sorry, I accidentally hit the stop share button when I was trying to hit and go to one of my tabs. So this is the publicly supported Docker image that we are integrating with. And when you go to, I guess I can go to the code. This morning I was doing testing and I accidentally pruned my Docker network on my machine about 30 minutes ago. And now I'm having trouble getting Docker to stand up again. So I am not able to specifically show that right now, but I can show you the GitHub repository. So under reporting, Docker Compose. So we've now added all the services to this file. So NiFi, the Postgres database, Zookeeper, Kafka, and Superset are all stand up when you do Docker Compose up in this reporting folder in the OpenLMIS reference distro. So that's it for standing up Superset. The next thing that we worked on is very specific to NiFi. And again, this is the code. It's the pull request that has been created by the team. NiFi has a processor to connect over HTTP to OpenLMIS. And that processor type is called invoke HTTP. And we use that processor type to interact with each of the microservices. There's a known issue with that processor type where it doesn't fully support OAuth 2, which is required for interacting with the OpenLMIS microservices. And so Jason, one of our senior developers, has gone through and added OAuth 2 support to that invoke HTTP processor so that in the future, we can use both the authorization credentials and the authentication credentials instead of URL encoding the username and password. So what this allows us to do is to more, in a more straightforward way, connect over HTTP in NiFi. This pull request is going to the Apache NiFi community to be reviewed this week, and Jason will continue supporting that. There's a much bigger, there are a number of people that need to be involved in that pull request as well. The core work is done, the service tests are all passing, and we've got it working on our, in Jason's development environment. The third and final item that we got to was evaluating, and this is something that I worked on, was evaluating the NiFi registry for version controlling flows. And the core part of this work was to stand up the NiFi registry. And when we're talking about business value, NiFi performs all of the configuration. And in order to configure the connector between all of the OpenLMS microservices and the reporting stack, we need to be able to load in templates that have been built by the development team. So there was a manual process for storing these templates. So that's defined here in the document. Effectively, a developer, as they're modifying NiFi, once they get their templates created, they have to export the template, download it to their local machine, commit that to GitHub, and then post it to GitHub. This kind of multi-step process. This process is manual, and the NiFi registry allows us to right-click within a developer's NiFi machine. You can right-click on a particular processor group and start version control automatically. And so what that allows any developer to do is to, as they modify the flows within their NiFi local development instance, they can commit those directly to the NiFi registry, and then the NiFi registry retains a complete history of all changes to all workflows. So if you think about it, it's kind of like GitHub, kind of accessing version control by just right-clicking a particular processor in NiFi or a processor group, and then starting version control in that processor group. So we did a research spike just to identify that it works and to highlight some of the challenges to this approach. I think the next steps here, there are a couple of challenges that we need to discuss with the OpenLMS team. Primarily, does the OpenLMS community want to maintain a separate service, including authentication parameters to be able to maintain another service for the community. That's it for the updates. I'll go ahead and pause there and ask if there are any questions about what we did do this sprint.
No, I guess I just have one question on the getting the pull request from the last item work that you showcased. Do you have any concerns about that timing, since it's relying on their community processes?
Right. So the pull requests are usually reviewed within 2 business days. And so my hope is that it would be the processor would be merged by the end of next week, and then we would be able to begin using it. We can start using it now because we've got the bundles built in our local instances. It's just that it's not yet merged with the NiFi master. Ultimately, we would want this feature to be released in NiFi 1.8. So we're able to use these processor groups now in all of the demo environments and all those bundles.
Thanks.
I have a different question.
Sure.
If a lot of these reporting tools are now part of the Docker Compose, is our end goal, or maybe this has already happened, that on our demo and UAT servers for OpenLMIS, you can actually open Superset and see reports?
Yeah, so that's the goal of the next sprint, to integrate it with the CI process, so that we can begin building integration tests and allowing these servers to be stood up through Jenkins and added to the kind of UAT processes.
Awesome. Great.
Yeah, and I think that's core for the 3.4 release, is getting all of that completed. So I think it's important to kind of talk about what we didn't get done over the last week. I had a couple, I had kind of two major things that I was planning on doing on the period of Monday and Tuesday this week, and I had a family emergency. So I'm back at work today, and I'll continue on these researching Postgres and reviewing the ELMIS dashboards, as well as I have another item here, writing a report that describes the current state of the reporting stack. Things happened during the sprint that I couldn't account for at home. And so everybody's fine, but that's the primary reason that I wasn't able to get these items that are in progress complete. I also want to ask for the support of the JSI team in identifying specifically how to stand up a version of OpenLMIS version 2 with demo data and a reporting stack, or if we could get kind of SSH or SQL database access to an existing demo. We would need to do that in order to complete 4778, which is an analysis of the Postgres database structure for OpenLMIS version 2. So if we could get support on that would be, as soon as possible, that would be great.
Yeah, and I don't know, Elias, if you want to quick speak up, but he responded that he'll be able to support that request after this call.
Oh, great. Thank you. All right, so that's it for the ONA updates.
Thank you, Craig. Next up is Team Parrot.
Okay, Mateusz, do you want to start?
I can start.
Okay, go on, Jakub.
Yes, so the first task I've done this sprint was to upgrade Jenkins and plugins. So I did a backup of our instance and updated them. As you can see, Jenkins is now running the latest stable version. And I was able to re-enable Jenkins Blue. Previously, it broke our builds, but after updating the plugins, it now works fine. So the next ticket was about making periods for initiate endpoint self-sufficient. Previously, when we tried to initiate a requisition, we had to make two separate calls, one to get periods for initiate and the other one to search for requisitions. And currently, we only make the swarm call to get previous for initiate. And I've included requisition ID and requisition status in that endpoint. So we are able to determine which requisitions already exist, and yeah, it works as previously. Yeah, so this was a bug with user permissions not refreshing, and I wasn't able to reproduce it, so I marked this as dead. And the last ticket I have is pushing Docker images right after build stage. So previously we pushed our images at the end of each pipeline, which caused problems when, for example, there were contract tests failing. We couldn't get those changes to the test server. So now we push those images and trigger a build of the test server right after the build stage. Yeah, so that's all I have. Mateusz, do you want to continue?
Yeah, sure. Okay, can you see my screen?
I can see your screen.
Okay. So today I'll be showcasing both my tickets and those done by Claudia, because she's on the leave now. So yeah, the first one is about getting rid of credentials in a pipeline configuration. So actually, we weren't able to achieve that because there were some limitations of using the pipelines, triggering the pipelines from GitHub. So we have to keep the credentials, and we just changed them to some new accounts. So there is no longer a Claudia credentials in Jenkins, but only those from the OpenLMS OpenLMS CI account. So this was it. The next one is about enabling branch sonar analysis. So this one was about adding the branching in the sonar. So as you can see on the sonar page, sonar cube page, we have some new projects that actually are the analysis for separate branches. So as you can see, we have this OpenMLIS requisition UI branch analysis, which where this branch analysis is the name of a branch. We have a couple more probably. This PR3 OpenMLIS 4958 and probably this is everything, and we were just adding the property branch to those to our sonar cube jobs in our services, and yeah, this is about it. So next one, next one is a bug about submitting the physical inventory. So this was caused by some rework of the date picker. And it actually, the physical inventory model was the only place that we didn't actually update it with the newer date picker implementation, and the initial value selected in the date picker, which is today's date, was in the wrong format, and this was causing sending the empty value to the server. So this was fixed. The next one is about entering the receive page for the family planning as administrator. So here we had two issues. One was with demo data. One was actually that we have a part of performance data in the stock management service for the source and destinations, which were actually pointing to the facilities that were from the performance data, but we didn't have them on the UAT or test servers. So those performance data from stock management were moved to the demo data repository. And the second issue was actually that we didn't have some records for destinations and sources for some facilities. So those were added, and everything works fine now. And this issue was actually resolved by the previous one. So we just move it to done. And here we have the issue with entering the CC inventory screen. So this was about this was caused by the empty list of CC alerts and the lack of check if this this list is empty, and this caused some exceptions in the browser console. So this was also fixed and now works properly. And this is about making the changing the message and the the error code for the SQL constraint. So the problem was that if we were adding the the new inventory item with already existing number and model, we were getting this this SQL constraint violation exception and the 500 error, and this was actually changed to 400 but request error with a proper message. Yeah, and here we have the batch retrieval for the programs. So now we can just retrieve programs by multiple IDs. So let me just show you that here in the URL we have two IDs, and we have those two programs filtered. So this was it. And the second one is very similar, actually the same. And the only difference is that this was done for the processing periods. So as you can see here, for the processing periods, we have, again, two IDs, and we have filtered to processing processing periods. So those two were done for the performance improvements to the fulfillment service, and then the follow-up ticket will be worked on in the next sprint. And this one is about adding the idempotency key into the requisition status change requests. This allows us to check whether we are sending two requests at the same time from the UI on the server, and return 409 error codes. If it was if we sent two requests, so maybe I will just try to show you that it works on the initiate. Let's hope that you would see this. So let me just go to the bottom. Yeah, and maybe planning. Okay. Maybe essential nets. Network and proceed. Okay. And here we have the initiating requests request, and here we have the idempotency key header, which is a UID. And if I will try, if I try to send this initiate request again, okay, and just copy this header. Okay, let me just grab the access token. Okay, and yeah, here we have 409 conflict and the message that this request was already sent. So this is how the idempotency keys work. And this was the last piece for this concurrency issues problem. and only part left is testing this solution, the both solutions, and then release doing the patch release. And the last ticket from me was about making the performance job screen. So in order to make those performance jobs passing, I had to lower the requirements for some endpoints, and for all of those changes, I made some tickets to improving the performance. So there are now quite a lot of them. And as you can see on the Jenkins, most of the performance, actually all of the performance jobs are passing with C fulfillment and so on. Only one recently failing is the reference data performance. And I would like to point out that it was recently broken. And actually one case is changes to the user updates and creating the user. So the performance jobs probably weren't updated. So I will just notify Nikodem and Łukasz after they came back from the leave. And the second issue is with updating facility. And I checked that the problem is with the newly added constraint for duplicated supported programs. And if someone who added this constraint probably also should update this those performance jobs. So, So I would like to point out that we need to fix those too. This is everything from me. Are there any questions? Okay. So if not, maybe you, Sebastian, want to continue?
Yeah, sure. Actually, I don't have any ticket to showcase, but I want to share my findings about the one that we have in progress, as I think we are running into those problems a lot. And it's worth just showing this really quick. So let me share my screen and please let me know if you can see it.
I can see it.
Okay, great. So the ticket I am talking about is this one that I have taken, and it's about updating the our Jenkins to provision more worker nodes. And it's also a research of potentially using a plugin to use EC2 spot instances. I have looked into this a little bit, and we probably won't be using spot requests. I need to do a little more research, but it probably won't be profitable for us. Anyways, the two things I want to show with Jenkins are related to the problems that we are getting a lot with worker nodes, Amy's slaves not starting up automatically. And I've been looking into this, and there are essentially two ways to make those, to spawn those worker nodes. One of them is, I just need to log in. So one of the ways is to add them kind of manually on the screen. So there is this dropdown here, provision via AWS. And if I do this, it will create this additional working node. And if you add this manually this way, it seems that this the slave worker node will be started once, but once it shuts down due to inactivity, it won't be started again on its own, like when there is a, when there are jobs waiting in the queue. And so how it should be done properly is via this manage Jenkins and configure system. Screen. And here we have the settings for the Amazon EC2 plugin. And here we have the advanced button. Yeah, and here we get to set how many worker nodes we would want to have. And in case we don't have that many already and we have a queue of jobs on the Jenkins, then Jenkins will create those worker nodes for us. And it turns out that if Jenkins creates them other rather than us creating that manually, then we don't have that problem with those nodes not starting up on their own. So that's one issue that we should consider and remember as we are doing any changes on Jenkins. And another is about changing the scripts for the for starting up nodes. So again, you can do it in two ways, and you can do this for this specific slave node. So here we are configuring configuring this specific EC2, and we have that script to set it up. But if we do it here from this screen for this specific node, when a new node is spawned, it won't contain those changes that we have made for this specific node. So again, we should be changing the script template rather than the script for a specific instance. And we are doing this on exactly the same screen that that we have seen before. So manage Jenkins, configure system. And in the configuration of the EC2 plugin, we have this init script field where we can provision the script that should be executed when the EC2 instance is started. Yeah, so as we continue making any changes on Jenkins, let's just remember about this so we don't keep running into the problems with worker nodes not starting up automatically again. Yeah, and that's just all that I wanted to talk about in this ticket. And as I said, it's still in progress. Our goal is to have more than one worker node, and we also want to possibly use newer EC2 instance. Currently, we are using M3 large. We may be migrating to M5 large. Are there any questions about this?
Any reason to not move to M5 now?
Well, it turned out that simply switching to M5 won't work. There is a number of changes that need to be made to have the M5 working. For example, you can't run the M5 EC2 instance without the VPC on Amazon. So we have to create a special VPC just for the for those EC2s. We also have to create a separate security group that will be linked with this VPC. We have to update that on the Jenkins. We also have to use different image from Amazon because the current one that we are using with Ubuntu 14 doesn't have support for something that I don't remember what was, but it was something about advanced networking or so. So we have to find another image with Ubuntu and probably a newer one. Yeah, and then we also probably also need to configure that image somehow for us to work. So there is a lot to do to make M5 work for us.
Okay. And did you say we're going to do it in a different ticket, split it out of this one, or are we waiting for this one?
No, I was thinking to do this as a part of this one, but yeah, I'm not sure how many more issues we'll be having introducing M5. So
okay.
I might as well just drop it and stay with M3, but yeah, we'll see, I guess.
Okay. There is an incentive in that we have to pay more for an M3 and we get fewer resources out of it.
I'm sorry, can you repeat?
We have to pay more. An M3 is more expensive than an M5. So, and there's fewer resources that we get out of that M3 than the M5. So we should definitely balance it, but if we can update, it would be nice.
Okay. That makes sense. Any other questions? Okay, if not, I will stop sharing and that's it from Team Parrot.
Thank you, Sebastian and Matush. So next is Team JSI and Elias will be showcasing for Team GSI. Hi, Elias. You may need to unmute.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. So for Team GSI, I and Artunya would be demonstrating. From my side, if I can start with what I've worked on, the first ticket that I would be talking about is the release a requisition without converting it to order, or LMIS 4865. This is a ticket that I was able to demonstrate in progress in the last sprint showcase, but that was in progress. But this time, all of the items that were remaining were addressed, and so it's in the done column. So this is a story about adding this button on the convert to order screen. And if the user decides not to convert a requisition to order, they will be able to click it and be able to release this requisition without converting it to order. In a story that is related to this, I also worked on OLMIS 4958. This is about creating a consolidated API for releasing requisitions. So before working on release without order, there was an API endpoint that was developed and was being used. It was the convert to order API. The first implementation attempt that I did was to create a similar API endpoint that allows you to release a requisition without order, but with some consultation and also with a few reviews, we thought it was better to create one consolidated API and for that API to be RESTful too. So in this case, this convert to order API is deprecated, and another API that is able to release a requisition with or without order is created. This is, I think, in my opinion, much better than the previous way that this was done. So this would accept only one resource, and that resource would contain a number of requisitions to release, which is releasable requisition DTO, and is able to process it based on the create order Boolean value that's associated with the main resource. So this is also implemented, and related to this, the UI is also updated to make sure that the convert to order and release without order, both functionalities use this new resource instead of using separate resources. So this is also another thing that has been done in this sprint. And the other stories are holdovers from the previous sprint. These were also in progress in the previous sprint, and also the functionalities are also demonstrated. The first one is about retrying FTP when an order fails to transfer. That's as a button that's added on the view order screen. For those that have the right, they will be able to see a retry button on the failed transfer orders. Orders that have failed transfer status will start showing the retry button here, and the users would be able to retry to submit the orders to the ERP via FTP. So this is also another story that's completed on this sprint. Another story that was also in progress in the previous sprint that's complete is allowing filtering of orders by status in the view order screen. So this is also a functionality related to view orders. And in this case, you'd be able to filter requisitions based on their status here. So if I say, show me only the received ones, it would be able to filter it by those that meet that status. So these are the functionalities that were complete in this sprint. There were other investigative work that was done in around the RNR column, but that's also something that will be complete in the next demonstration. So I won't be getting into that. So if you have any questions, you're welcome. If you don't have any questions, I'd let Adunya continue with his demonstration. Adunya?
Yeah, I'm here, yes.
All right.
Okay, thank you. Can you see my screen?
Yes, hello? I can.
All right. So for this sprint, I worked on a bug ticket and also one feature ticket. So one of the tickets on the bug list is for the requisition template. So when a requisition template was saved, when on the definition, if there is a longer text, it takes longer than 140 characters, the error should be shown, but previously it was successfully saving. But at this time, it was already fixed. For example, I can do something like this. There's too many characters in here. When I save it, it shows the regression template is invalid. So this is one of the fix. The other one is error message when the facility was saved, and if there is a duplicate supported program, it used to save without any issue, but that was a problem. And if there is a similar supported program, it has to show an error for the user. To show this, I can post this data on. On Postman. And on the supported program, we have a duplicate supported program here. Okay. With similar supported program. And when I send it, yeah, it shows there is a duplicate supported program. So this one is also fixed. And currently, one of the things I'm working on that I'm going to show on the next demo is toggling a requisition on approval for approvers on approval page for the quantities between vaccine size and dosage unit. And it's already on progress. If we open a requisition from the approval list. So an approver, before they approve, they can see the quantities with PACS and doses alternatively so that they can calculate properly. So this is currently almost in progress, and it's going to be finalized for the next demo. So that's on my side. Is there any question?
Thank you, Antonia. And if there is no question, I will give it back to you.
Okay. Thank you, Ilias and Adenya. Last up is Chong Sun. He's going to be giving us an overview of what Team Mind the Gap worked on, because Nicodem and Lukasz are on vacation today. So.
Okay. Let me share my screen. Let me know if it when it comes through.
We can see it.
Okay. So So I'm going to just give high level overview of the tickets that were done for Mind the Gap, and I'll probably not go through the bugs, but just mention them. So the first one is 4903, which is to create this new user contact details resource. This is sort of taking this user information and sort of creating a new resource in the notification service. All this work is sort of in this epic of redesigning the notification service so that it holds sort of contact information for users, and then using that to so that when notification requests are sent to the notification service, we're able to use the contact information to determine who to send to and if a certain notification needs to be sent or if a certain message needs to be sent. So, okay, so so let me show the notification documentation. So here's the API console. And we now have this new user contact details resource. And I believe this particular ticket was talking about get and put API for a particular user contact detail. And that's what's here. Which generally matches what was in the ticket. Okay. So that's basically it for the ticket. Because we created this new resource and the notification service beforehand did not have was not storing any information, so we kind of put in database information for that. I believe there's also some demo data sort of copied from the reference data, demo data. Okay. The next one is 4907, moving email verification to the notification service. So with this, we sort of move the logic of verifying emails from, I believe it was from reference data, or I think it was a combination of auth and reference data, and we moved it to the notification service. And basically put it under the user contact details as sort of a sub-resource called verifications. And so, so you'll see here in the API documentation, we have this new verification section where you can create a new email verification, which would essentially send an email to that person. And then there's the second one, which takes a particular token, and that essentially verifies that this email is valid. So that's kind of all that I'm going to show for this particular ticket. So for the next one, 4904 to update the endpoint for notifications. So basically this one is, we generally had one main API to send notifications, which was just creating a notification or posting to the notifications resource. And it had this kind of request body, which was very email specific. And so we changed the sort of the interface so that it would be something more like this, where you just specify a user ID that you are creating this notification for. And then there's sort of this messages body of different sort of notification channels, of sort of all the different channels that you want to potentially send to, so like email or SMS, and then the content of the message would be within each channel. So, so let me, so I can show that here. And you can see the schema has changed to user ID and to this messages. However, let's see, to actually kind of show that, let me see if I can actually kind of demonstrate that we have this new. So when creating the actual, I'm not sure if this will actually work, but so this is essentially kind of the new request body of user ID and messages, and then kind of specifying the different channels within it. So appears to have worked, but I don't think I'm actually going to be able to show any kind of functionality, but that's sort of the new interface for creating notification. I believe that other services that essentially create notifications have also changed, kind of match this new interface when creating notifications to the notification service. So let me just stop here for a second to see if there's any questions about the tickets that I've showcased so far.
Hi, Chung-Sung, it's Mary Jo. I have a question about the new, within the notification service. Does that mean then that when translations of
of actual notifications, where would that be done?
I believe that is, I don't think the notification service handles that. It just takes the actual messages that have already been translated, and it is just determining which channels to send to, like, for the user.
So where are the messages stored?
So, like, the messages that, like, sort of like the templates that you would want, like the email templates, those are probably stored in each individual service that wants to send a notification.
Okay. So the actual templates are what would need to be translated, correct?
Yes. And the notification doesn't know anything about that. All it knows is, you know, I have this contact information for these users. There's these notifications coming in, and I'm just trying to figure out who to send to and if I should send it and which channels I should send to, that kind of thing.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, if there are no other questions, I'll continue.
I just had one quick one, which is that one of the last things you said as you were finishing up there was, does the other services, do they still need to be changed to conform to this interface? Could we do like an API version 2 sort of thing? Or, sorry, what did you say there?
I don't remember exactly, but I think the other services, like, because the notification service interface has changed, the other services probably have also, like, they're code to send notifications have probably also changed to the new interface.
Ah, okay. Gotcha. Nice.
Okay. So the next one is updating the user and the reference data. So what this did was we created a cross-service migration. Since we're kind of moving these, particularly the phone number and the email information, to this new user contact details resource, which is in a different service, we need to sort of move some demo data or copy demo data and kind of create this cross-service migration. And let me see if I can show that here. So the cross-service migration is here. In this new repo, and this would need to be run on a production instance when moving to the next version. And let's see, this is also the demo data for user contact details that have been copied over to the notification service. This ticket did not remove that data from reference data or remove those fields. I think we were deciding to do that after the 3.4 release. Okay, so let me go on to the next one. Okay, so this was actually the code for the other services to change how they send notifications to the notification service. So this was to match the change in interface that was done in 4904. Okay, so I won't really talk too much about that. 40, and the next one is 4934, which is just creating a contract test for this email verification that had moved to the notification service. And so I'll just show that sort of in the contract tests repo. Sort of a new contract test was created to make sure that the email verification sort of works as we said. So that's kind of all the various tickets. There were a couple bugs. One was that the user should not be allowed to update this particular value of number of months in the period in a requisition. They were able to update that, so we just we fixed that bug. And the second one was some of the stock management screens on perf test were not able to get to them, and it was just because of a long URI. So this issue has been seen before, so this was just kind of a fix for that. So I think that's all the tickets that that were done in the sprint. There is another ticket that's in review, but I won't showcase that since it's not finished yet. Any questions? All right, if not, then I'll, that's all I have, so I'll stop sharing.
Okay, thank you, Chong-sun. And so that is the end of our sprint showcase for sprint 102. Are there any last comments or questions that anyone would like to add about the sprints? Okay, well, thank you, everyone.
Yep, and just a friendly reminder that 3.4 is coming up, and if you have any questions or concerns about getting work done or the release process, please make sure to ask or reach out to Sam and the rest of the team so that we can make sure all the teams are prepared for the release coming up. And I'm sure Sam will be in touch soon about the release process in general, but just flagging for everyone to be thinking about.
Yeah, thanks for the reminder, Mary Jo. Okay, thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey,
thank you.
Thanks, take care.